Welcome to the Spa Girls Podcast, the self-publishing podcast for authors. You're in the right place for the best writing, marketing, and publishing advice, plus interviews with experts from the industry and best-selling authors, just like today. I'm Shah Barrett.
I'm Cheryl Phipps.
I'm Wendy Bella.
And I'm Trudy Jay. And today we have Lillian Lark.
Yay!
Welcome, Lillian.
Hi.
Hello. Hi. Lillian writes Monster Romance, which we're super excited to talk about today. It's a emerging genre on maybe, or maybe it's emerged. Maybe it's fully fledged.
I think
that's
it's
all we're going to find out from Lillian today.
I think it's emerged.
It's emerged. Okay.
And I'm going to kick off with her bio.
Yeah.
Born and raised in the saltiest of cities in Utah, Lillian is an avid reader, cat mum to three demons, and loves writing sexy stories that twist you up inside. Great bio. Mm. Welcome, Lillian.
Thank you so much. Like, this is really exciting.
We're excited to have you.
We're excited to have you. So let's just start off in the beginning. Like, how did you get into writing? How did you get into self-publishing? You know, tell us a little bit about your journey.
Let's see. I've always loved reading. Like, huge reader all the time. It's my escape. How I deal with stress is I binge read, and a lot of what I was reading are like indie romances. Like, it started because my boyfriend, who is now my husband, gave me a Kindle once upon a time, and so I would just like load it up with all the free books. And the majority of them are romances. And so I was like, hey, I really like these. And then, of course, like, start buying them. And then, like, Kindle Unlimited came out. And so, huge fan. I, when I was a kid, would have loved to been an author. Like, I was like, yeah, like, that would be really cool. And then, like, my second thought would be like, wow, that probably doesn't make any money. And so that was like a discarded dream. I did a whole, because of course when you're like, no, authors don't make money, you go into like art for a living. Like, that's of course,
I mean,
it's way more logical. Way more logical. Got burned out, went back to school for engineering. I don't know why. It was like, I graduated. I have a degree in it. Anyway, I got a really cool internship opportunity, even though like by senior year, I'm just like, I don't know if this is for me to actually like work in, because I had done an internship and I was like, I don't know about this. And then I got a really cool internship opportunity for NASA in Virginia.
Wow.
Which is a big deal. And I was like, okay, like, I'm gonna do this, and like, if this isn't like my calling, then we'll figure it out, because if the best place in the world is like not for me for this job, then
you know it's not for you.
It is, you know for sure
it doesn't,
and fit. Then you have to face the whole degree that you got for it anyway. So I did. I had to I moved across country for the first time alone, because I've been married for a while, and I'd never lived any like separately from my husband other than to be like live with my family. And so I moved across country alone for this internship, and everyone else was on like a different time zone. And like, it doesn't seem like that much different of a time zone, but like, it was harder to like connect with people or talk with people. And I was reading constantly, because of course, like, stressful new situation. And I was like, okay, I'm getting a little sick of reading. And I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna write a book, because I don't know if this engineering thing is for me after all. So maybe I'll write a book, and maybe I'll be great at that, like naturally inclined to that. So I did. I wrote, that was where I wrote my first book, was in Virginia, and then came back during COVID actually, How long ago did you write that first book? I published it in the 2020, so like the cursed year, cursed 2020. Like as soon as the lockdown started happening, they sent everyone home. We had to finish our internship, in our home state, or they preferred us to, since everyone had to be remote anyway for those government jobs. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, cool. Like I finished a very short book, which like I was like, okay, now I need to learn how to do everything else, because all of these authors that I super love self-publish it. So of course I'm going to self-publish it. And I had to learn about things like dialogue tags and like how to appropriately use them. And like, so all these things that maybe someone would have been taught if they went for writing in college, like I just had to learn them later and rewrite and rewrite and rewrite. But it was really like an educational experience. I was able to do that and like finish college at the same time. Yeah, so that is how I started writing. Then I was like, hey, I want to publish, and maybe this can go somewhere and I don't have to work in engineering for very long. Like that was a goal.
So you'd made the decision that engineering wasn't going to be your calling.
Yeah, like NASA was super cool. Super cool. It was just like something I like to learn about, not necessarily something I want to do every day. And like it's really difficult to find that thing that like what you would want to do every day instead of like what's super interesting to you, because everything is super interesting to me.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you should go to school multiple times for it.
Lots of people do.
Yeah. I know. I feel for them.
So you first published in 2020, and then what happened? Mm-hmm. Because what was your first book? Was it a...
It's Tangled Wires. It's like an android romance. It's a little darker than like my monster romances. So not as many people read them or read it now. And I think Alessandra Torre has this like course of like how to publish a book. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, this is just a collection of things I could find on the internet. And now I'm realizing that was actually a really good thing to do for me. Yeah. Because like it just tells you all the things you didn't know you needed to ask.
Yeah.
And so I'm meeting people now and they're just like, how do you do this? And I'm like, oh, that's how you do this.
Mm.
So good job, Alessandra.
Yeah. She's awesome.
Your first romance was android romance. Where did you go from there? So what was the next step?
I really just kept like, of course I genre hopped, and because of course I can't stay in one genre, and did like a romantic suspense that I really enjoyed. And then did a paranormal romance that I really enjoyed. And I'd had three books. Of course, they weren't selling super well. I was doing all the social media things that people in all of the courses like recommend. Like I set up my newsletter how I wanted. I did like the Instagram. I did the Facebook. But like I wasn't really getting traction. I think I did a couple of like email, like paid newsletters. And I still was like, all right, so this is going to be a slow thing. Like, this is like, I'm just going to build my backlist. Because like a lot of people say, once you have a backlist, then you can start doing more paid advertising. Because then it makes more sense financially. Because then if you get one reader, it goes through all the series. Yeah. I'm like, oh, well, I need a series for that. Which, to be fair, like I did set up my paranormal romance. My first paranormal romance was Three of Hearts, and it's like it's a harpy romance.
Yeah.
All of my paranormal romances, including like the monster romance, are in the same universe. So I only needed to make the rules once for me.
Yeah.
I do have to like talk about them in every book, but like the rules don't change. This is the world, and all the characters like go back and forth. I was like, okay, so I really needed to do the second, which is the sister's book in that paranormal romance, because I knew like for longevity, that paranormal romance was something that I knew I could write like more. Like those things were easier for me to like think about, easier to write about than something that was like constrained by reality, contemporary romances and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, I really need to do the second book. Everyone keeps asking for it. And it wasn't happening.
You didn't want to write it.
I kept looking at it. Like, I didn't want to write it. And I went through with the character's motivations. I'm like, okay, like someone's like, oh, like in the first book, you talk about how this sister got like banned from this bathhouse. It's like a sexy bathhouse where everyone goes to have fun with another. And no one gets turned away, but somehow she got banned. Like, you should do like a newsletter magnet or something. I'm like, you are right. I should do a newsletter magnet or something. And I thought about it and I was like, oh, if it's a bathhouse, oh, maybe there are tentacles involved.
Oh.
My brain goes yeah, places. It's just like I've read alien romance for so long that I was just like, oh, that seems like really fun. Like, it'll just be this short, it'll be this little novella. It's like, you know, this tiny, maybe even a short story that would be a newsletter magnet, talk about how this character got kicked out of this bathhouse and have like this little romance with like a kraken and like maybe like the bathhouse owner. And that's how the monster romance stuff started, because like I was like, okay, and now she's a matchmaker, and she's a matchmaker for like monsters. I'm like, okay. And so then like it just kept building and building, and it was not a short story. That is how I got like my first book that started selling like a lot better.
Is it?
And I was stalked by the Kraken.
Stalked by the Kraken.
Yeah, stalked by the Kraken.
Yeah, and that one came out in June 2021. And that's now got 2,616 ratings on Amazon.
Wow.
As of this morning. So
yeah. Yeah. People were really, I was scared to publish that one. Like I was scared to like talk about it, to like announce it. Cause as soon as you announce it, I feel like you have to publish it at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So like at the point where I was like, okay, like I have this book, I really love it, but I don't know if paranormal romance readers will go for tentacles. Mm-hmm. Like that might be too much. Like, I don't know if that's like, because sci-fi romance is, of course, they're like, yes,
yeah,
you needed more tentacle themes, honestly. But like, with the paranormal romance,
yeah,
like, is it going to be one of those things where it's like in the middle? It's too weird for one category,
yeah,
and it's not weird enough, or yeah, not like scientific Fredo's enough for the other. And so I was like concerned. And at the end of it, I was like, well, my other books really aren't selling. So like, yeah, I just burned the pen name, right? Like that's an option. Like if everyone hates it, we'll just like start over. It'll be fine. I really loved the book. So I was like, we'll figure it out. We'll cross the bridge. If everyone hates it, we will cross the bridge when we get there. And then everyone really liked it. And I was like, good.
Relief.
I'm so relieved.
So what happened? Did you push it at all when you launched it? Or was it just a natural thing?
It was a TikTok thing. It was 1,000% a TikTok thing. I got like, originally, first time I got on TikTok, I was like, I hate this. Like, this is awful.
Yeah.
I didn't like that the videos auto played. I didn't like the audio like that of videos auto playing. So like, still today, when I surf TikTok, I do it muted. Like, I can't stand this when they auto play audio. But I was like, I don't like this. And I did like a few, because people were talking about how impactful TikTok was. And I was just like, okay, I'll do a few. They didn't really go anywhere. I think it was like a few months later, someone like did another thing about how impactful TikTok is. And I was like, okay, I will try it again. And I'm like, but I can't do the dances. Like I can't mime the sound effects. Like that, it's not me. I don't like it. Everyone else is going to tell that I don't like it. And if it's going to like torture me to do it, then like, I'm not we're not going to be doing this for very long.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, like what can I do? And I was like, well, like I really love reading and all of these authors that I super love, like I'll just talk about the books. I'll talk about books I really like. And since like a lot of the books that I write have similar like themes as some of the books that I love to read, like I'll just like mesh them and do like where I recommend my book if they're looking for this theme and two others if they're looking for like that same theme.
Mm-hmm. And that's like, a great idea.
Yeah.
I want to say that it was like, oh, it's so strategic and so like well thought out, but like I started realizing how short a minute was, and so then I would put like the little trope tags in there and be like, okay, like I can't sit here and do an entire recap of the book and tell how it's grumpy sunshine, tentacles, and lots and lots and lots of fluids, but I can like list sorry, I thought I was going to be able to get through that without laughing. But I can list little like things on the screen and have them line up to the book for that like however many second long like description that is, and then go to the next book. And that ended up, people really responded to that kind of format of having like things that they wanted listed out and having it in this format that they could easily access, because since I always listen to them muted, I have captions on everything. And so someone could just sit there and screenshot, what a lot of them do. Like when the book comes up, they screenshot like all the tag tropes and like the cover, and they just really liked that. They really responded to it, and TikTok rewarded that. And that was, I was incredibly lucky for that to happen. Mm-hmm. And super fortunate that like people responded so well. It's really nice. Awesome. I didn't get,
I
didn't get that many.
TikTok's a nightmare. It's a minefield of, I have no idea what to do on it. You know, like, isn't that? So to find your niche straight away goes awesome.
So did you, were you on TikTok before your book came out, or were you, you started after it?
I was on TikTok because I did have three books that I could just talk about. And since it wasn't costing me any money, I could do that. And like during that time, people were then reading the other books that I would recommend because I loved them so much. Because like that's what a lot of my TikToks are, is just me like recommending books that I really love. And so they would read those books and be like, I really love those books. I trust you. What else are you going to recommend me? And like that helped immensely for when I was like, here's my book. And then they're like, I like that book. I'm like, thanks. and then when I was like, okay, so tentacles. And people are like, I don't know about tentacles. I'm like, I know. I know. But here are other two books. Like, here's my pre-order. Maybe you're curious. And so, like, I got the most pre-orders to date on that book. I think it was, like, 100 and something. I was, like, shocked. I was so shocked. But then it came out in Kindle Unlimited, and people were just talking about it. Like, a lot of other people would talk about it. It just spread really well. I was like, oh, this is actually really working out. Because a lot of people loved it. It resonated so much with, because like this, the core of that book is you've got a matchmaker who doesn't believe in her matching skills anymore, because she thought she had 100% match for herself and ended up getting her heart broken. And so she's in a funk. She doesn't trust like the things that her brain is telling her, because obviously she, if she made that big of a mistake, like how can she even match anyone else? So when this Kraken comes in and he's just like, knows that she's not interested in a relationship, but knows that they're fated, he has to be like, I want to be in, like, let's arrange for us to be able to have fun time in this bathhouse, since you guys, like, the way the bathhouse works is that it harvests energy from sex. And so he's like, hey, so that's also like a side plot, is that for some reason they don't, they're like losing magic when they shouldn't be. And so he shows up, he's like, if I have sex here, like, this is going to go really well for you guys, because I'm real old, real powerful. And she's like, yeah, that sounds great. I don't know who I'd match you with, though. And he's like, yeah, I only want to match with you. And so he's like, what?
I get it.
So, like, that whole, like, arc of hers, like, having to trust herself again, like, that really hit people.
Yeah.
And
I think that can be in any trope, can't it? Yeah. That sort of thing. You know, like, it's something you read through. And it's just like one of those tropes. I love that trope myself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's one that works.
So those are awesome. Yeah. That's kind of like, I hear that and I'm like, immediately I want to read that book.
Yeah. So
you're doing a great job of kind of pulling in those. I want to call them universal fantasies, because I love Theodora Taylor and what she does. And I feel like that's
like
real,
same.
Yeah.
Like that book really helped me out.
Yeah.
Like, so it helped me finish.
How many books do you have out now?
I always say the wrong number when people ask me, and I don't know why. We have the three, Stockingham, Parasols, Gargoyles, Lake Monster. Like, I think eight.
And they're all set within the same world? Except for the same...
Sort of.
Are
six of them. Six of them, and then the other two aren't. The Lake first Monster. Two are not.
Yeah, like six, I think, in the same world.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Okay. So what classifies a monster romance, can I ask? Like, can you give us the attributes, the main attribute? What, you know, if I was thinking of writing monster romance, what would I need in my book?
Well,
tentacles, clearly.
I mean, tentacles are a great place to start. I'll be honest. Like, everyone loves tentacles. Not really. Like, some people, it's a little too far still. So, like, it's a paranormal romance at its core.
Mm-hmm.
And there is discussions, debates. Like, some people will not consider it a monster romance if they have a human form as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's fair. I never follow the rules. So I usually give them like both where they're shifters. But some people will still, under that definition, be like, no, it's a shifter romance then. Mm-hmm. Like, that's fair. Like, you can define it however you want to. But like, a big part of it is going to be that they're going to have some monstrous form.
Mm-hmm.
And another one is that, like, they're going to have like X-rated parts that aren't gonna be normal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
So, like, tentacles, knotting, ribs, the spur that Ruby Dixon has.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've just gotta not look
standard,
like a regular guy.
Yeah. Yeah,
a little bit
of something extra.
I'm assuming Abel had these things that would like stimulate at certain places. I'm like, yes, and she put them on a Minotaur, and I was like, wow, all right.
it's brilliant.
Yeah. So
I would say that would probably be a requirement. To be fair, I have not read like lower spice or like closed door monster romance before. I know that they probably exist. They're just not on my spectrum.
What's the length of one? Like, is there a traditional? Are they shorter? Are they longer? Where do they sit? Anywhere?
It feels like anywhere. There are some really popular ones that are very long. Like Lady of Rooksgrave Manor is pretty long. I say very long. I think of anything over 90K as long. Mm-hmm. Like, that's long to me. Yeah. 90K is pushing it. That's my Gargoyles book is like 95K. But like a lot of authors in this space are like 100, 140K. A lot of those are like multiple partners. So like, why choose?
That's a lot of sex going on, I would imagine.
Not always.
You reckon?
Not always.
A lot of fluids. like, Tiffany Roberts has her spider like series. Like, that's a lot of plot going on. And I haven't read them yet because I know there's a lot of plot going on.
I think you lost me on spider.
Yeah.
I was there for the
He's a spider alien.
Still cool. Spider. Mm-hmm.
Yes. But he has his own rope for bondage. Like.
I think the rules
for like monsters is that they have to have like cat decide whether you or not you want to stay on my lap. You have to have like fun with them. Like, there's got to be something that's like fun about it. And maybe it is very similar to like what kinks people actually have.
Yeah.
Like breeding kink is a huge thing. Mm-hmm. And that's very popular amongst the romance.
Yeah. Cause I think that's interesting. Cause I'm trying to figure out what it is about, monster romance that appeals to people, right? Not in a like in an academic sense,
because
it is very popular. And so, and I think that it goes back to personally, I think like Theodora Taylor, like a lot of those universal fantasy type things of like kind of, and a lot of what you're talking about is saying that these aliens have extra things to make it more pleasurable, I'm assuming, like the sex becomes more than just ordinary sex, it becomes like extra sex and there's kind of all this extra stuff going on. Is that kind of part
of it? Yeah, she's got a chapter that's like, was it Taken by the Beast?
Yeah.
Or something as one that she lists as a universal fantasy. I mean, that's true. That's valid.
Yeah.
It's more like they have special things that would even makes it better. Because like, you're not going to add things in it that's going to make it worse.
No.
Like, that's just not going to appeal to people.
Yeah.
Are you telling it through two points of view? The male and the female?
Most of the time. Mm-hmm. I would say that like the majority of what I read is dual point of view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
So
makes sense. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And had you read monster romance? You said you'd been reading alien romance before you wrote the Kraken book. So it came from alien romance for you rather than reading other monster romance. Is it something that was on your radar before you wrote the Kraken book, or?
Like it was mostly like my love of sci-fi romance that spurred me being like tentacle sounds like a good idea, and I was just so nervous about it because I hadn't seen it in a paranormal space.
Yeah.
But then A Lady of Rooksgrave Manor like published like. Shortly before Stuck by the Kraken, and everyone like was just raving about it. Like I already loved Catherine Moon. I loved her Lola and the Millionaires, and she does a lot of white shoes books. And so Lady of Rooksgrave Manor is like white shoes with monsters. I was like, yes, awesome. There were tentacles like mentioned like in the theater scene. People who know will know. And people were not like completely turned off by that. And I was like, yes, awesome. I can be brave. We can do this. We can still publish.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like one of the first where I was like, okay, so this, like I knew people would like it. People who like sci-fi will like it.
Mm.
But like, that was the first inkling that I saw that people who were interested in paranormal romance would also like it.
Mm.
So.
That's cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. So just in the marketing side of things, is TikTok your main sort of channel there?
Yes. TikTok is currently my main channel. Love to be able to get like some good ads. We'll see. TikTok is nice because it's free. It's just your, you know, your mental health sometimes. Like you have a setting that you can put in your TikTok of being like how long of screen time you have a day. And that's really helped me because it's really hard to put it down if you're successfully selling stuff on it. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, so every time I'm responding to a comment, this is actually helping me make money. And then where is your boundary of your personal life and your work life? And it just doesn't exist.
Yeah, it's a really good point.
It's huge.
That's fascinating.
I think we all can resonate to that.
Yeah.
How do you deal with some of the dodgy comments on there, Lillian, in terms of, I mean, you have a lot of supportive, and I've been a TikTok follower of yours right from the start, but, you know, sometimes your video, not you personally, but in general, sometimes videos end up on somebody else's For You page that really has no business wanting, you know, romance novels, let alone paranormal, let alone, you know, whatever. How do you deal with that? Like, do you delete? Mm-hmm. Do you ignore? What do you do?
Some of them are hilarious. Like, I think there was one where someone is like, what? Like, where did my TikTok bring me today? What? And I leave those because it's just funny. I'm just like, if you knew about the algorithm, you wouldn't comment, because obviously, like, you don't know. But if you do interact, if you comment, you're going to keep getting me.
Yeah. Good news, buddy. Now you're going to see double the tentacles.
But there are some, like, I don't get many, but I just look at them. I just delete them. Mm. And I've blocked a couple people. But, like, mostly I just, like, I look at it and I delete it. And I'm like, This is my page.
Yeah.
This is my content.
Absolutely.
Mostly it's just negative things about the book, because it's like, I'm sharing how much I love this book. Someone's like, I really hated this book. That author, like, usually I'll tag them, like, when I post the video. I don't want that author to see that.
Yeah.
So I just delete it because it's my page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense.
Good role.
So if you had like a bad interaction where like someone is like, they keep posting and posting and posting, and the one that like I was scared that it would escalate to that, I just blocked it. Yeah. Like, I blocked them off.
Yeah.
I was like, this is not worth it.
No.
Yeah. What about TikTok censorship? And I'm asking this for the listening audience, because I know exactly how you do it with your clever use of emojis. And if you know, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
It's a tricky emojis. One.
They're starting to crack down on the emojis.
Yeah, I know. Dang it.
It used to be that like abbreviations were fine. So like if you're doing, like I do a TikTok on like double penetration and just call it DP, and everyone's like, I love Dr. Pepper, even though like they know what I'm talking about. And so I would do like an emoji diagram above. I call like lots of fluids, or like cum being filled with joy. So like that's what it means when I put that on. Like,
don't worry, we'll put X-ray on this one, okay?
And I like the little emoji for that with a little water drop. It's like I saw one of yours, like, and I'm pretty sure I had like one.
But like everything, you know, TikTok's changing too, isn't it? It's clamping down too on so many things, you know, just because it's becoming more popular. It was going to happen. You know, so many more people are using it, especially authors, and with the heat levels and stuff, they were going to crack down sooner or later.
I'm okay most of the time. Most of the time I can get around it, and I can just explain it in a way. Like, I did a video on like, primal, and it's like, it's where they have a chasey chase with fun times at the end. Uh-huh. Like, people can like connect the dots.
Yeah.
Most people didn't say anything that was like...
Yeah, there is a way around most things. Yeah.
So is there a list of rules, or how do you know what is
no?
You just get a TikTok that's banned and then you kind of go, okay, so that wasn't allowed and keep moving on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will TikTok, if they ban you sort of more than once, two or three times, can you have your account shut down? I don't know much about it. Yeah, like you can. Yeah.
Yeah, you get, I think, so many warnings and then they'll terminate your account.
Like Facebook.
Yep. I laughed so hard when you asked if there are any rules. Like, how do we know what is too much?
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing of Amazon's guidelines.
Yeah.
It's whatever they decide is too much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So usually just try to keep my descriptions not that descriptive.
Keep on the good side. Yeah, for sure. I
think it will, like, sometimes I get like a warning, not like an official warning, but like I post the video and no one sees it. It has zero views 10 minutes later. I'm like, uh-oh. Something is there's something weird going on. Mm. One of them was I named a main character Mace. And Mace is like pepper spray in the United States. Thinking it was talking about weapons.
Yeah. Fair enough. And what about Facebook? Do you have a Facebook group or anything like that?
Yes, I have a Facebook group. I am really bad at having a Facebook group. But I have one. People keep joining it. I do some posts.
To be fair.
I let people go in and post about their books when, like, I know them and, like, know that the book will appeal to my audience. Like, I have a Facebook group. It's just, like, a place that sometimes I post, though. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not as many, like, interactions happening in the group as maybe someone else's Facebook group.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Is there any other marketing that you do then? You've got a newsletter. Do you do? When do you send that? How does that go for you?
Sorry, what was the question?
Newsletter. Can you tell us a bit? Have you got a newsletter? How does that go?
I love my newsletter. I'm not always great about being consistent because when like a deadline comes, I just like don't send anything out. Or like right now I've like promised them signed copies will be coming soon. And so like I feel really guilty if I want to tell them something else and not talk about my signed copies that are coming soon because they're just sitting here. I just do not have like the bandwidth to be able to fulfill orders in a timely manner and also finish this book and get it to the editor at the same time. Mm-hmm. That's usually like when there's a big space between my newsletters, I'm like, okay, like that's why. Because I feel guilty.
You just tell them that. I'm sure that'd be fine. You just tell them, do you want me to finish the book or do you want a signed copy? Either way.
Yeah, but I've done really well with newsletter, like people joining my newsletter from bonus content. So I do bonus epilogues. I have a few of them currently. I don't do it for every book. Usually if in the epilogue, they end with like a pregnancy or something, I don't give them a bonus epilogue.
Right.
Because, like, that feels like the end. I don't. That sounded bad. Of course, it's not the end. But, like if they're teasing about, like, trying to conceive through the book and it doesn't, like, happen at the end, then I'm like, okay, like, bonus epilogue. Yeah. You get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where you don't have to put.
How long are they, though, your bonus epilogues?
I'd say anywhere from 5 to 10K. Like, it's really just, like, however long it needs to be to get, like, the point across. I was going to say something and my brain is, like, gone. they've turned into where they're really, like, heart-touching, like, moments. Where they're like, that's why they'll go long. Ideally, it would just be like one sex scene and like a conversation. Mm-hmm. But it really is just, it's an extension to their story. And like, maybe it's going to be longer. Maybe it's going to be shorter.
Can I ask you about your writing process? How long does it take you to write a book?
I feel like every book is different at this point. I might just be because I'm still so new at this. that, and like I completely understand that I'm still a noob, since everything seems to change every single time. But like my first book, like I wrote it super quick, but like it was 2 months of going back through and like rewriting and revision. Like I had an editor that did like the first 2,000 words, and she did a really good job of like pointing out like these are called like be verbs and you should eliminate those, and like this is how you do a dialogue tag. And so those were like really helpful comments, so that when I would go back through and like go and condensing sentences, who knew that was a thing? Now I know. But like the revision of that just took so much longer than I think the book did. And now like that, the revision parts are shorter, like shortening, and the writing parts are lengthening, and then I get burned out and no writing happens. It's inconsistent. See,
and that's the like, author in you, the artist in you, right?
Yeah, like it would be ideal if I did 2,500 words a day.
Yeah.
And then like do that 5 days a week. Like that, I have a Gantt chart. This is my only engineering knowledge that I utilize, I feel like. But it's basically, it has a project broken down into like weeks, and you can say how much of the percentage of the project you have completed versus how many weeks you have left. And it like gives you nice color coding. You don't have to go to engineering school for using a Gantt chart. I would recommend otherwise. But
to save time.
Yes, to save time. You can just be like, oh.
Look it up on YouTube, maybe.
There you go.
Yeah, brilliant.
But I do try to estimate, like, give myself time, because I'll be like, okay, I know that it's probably going to be this long of a book, and I can do this many words a week. Sometimes that gets thrown out, but then I'll like chart out like, okay, and then it needs to be for at beta readers for this long, revisions for this long, and then editing, because I pay an editor because I'm bad at grammar.
Aren't we all?
I'm getting better. Yeah.
I'm terrible. I'm terrible.
Some people are really good because they're just like, this is not in agreement. I'm like, all right, does that mean it needs comma? No.
Chuck a comma in if it. Oh,
so are you aiming for like 2 books a year or 4 books a year? What is your plan? Even though you don't
ideally it would be like at least 4 books a year.
Right.
Because like after Kraken, like I did like Deceived by the Gargoyles was my next really big release, and that one like blew Kraken out of the water, and that one was the one that everyone fucking loves. And I love it, and it's great. And I burned out so hard at the end of it. I was just like, okay, like, what? Like, I need to be releasing, because that is how indie authors make money. I'm like, okay, but I am also making money right now. Like, yes. I'm making money on this book. People are really loving this book, and I'm making like considerable money on it. I'm like, okay,
good.
Is there a way to do this and not get burned out?
Yeah.
And so right now I'm in that position of being like, what is the life I want to have? Because, you know, we are the boss of our own schedule, not our insecurities and stress. Yeah. Like, we get to decide. I was like, okay, so if I do these books that hit well, and then like do really well, do I need to be trying to focus so hard on being like rapid releasing?
Yeah.
And when I looked at my stuff, and I was like the answer is like no. Like I could, like if I like do a repeat of like being able to deliver on reader expectations and giving people like those snazzy words that they really want, like snazzy words, like the things that they're feeling like super connected to, that they super adore. Like if I can focus on doing releases like that, then I don't have to like always be pushing like to do the next book. Ever, my readers would love me to write more books, I would love to write more books. And sometimes it just doesn't seem to really work with my brain. Mm-hmm. So really trying to focus on delivering like a real nice product that people really respond to. Like the whole me like illustrating my own covers thing, like that's how it is. Because otherwise, if I tried to rapid release and illustrate at the time, I wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah.
But people want covers that look like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're beautiful covers. And kudos to you. Yeah. I hadn't realized you actually illustrated them.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That was the art training that happened before. It's just,
So it all came in handy.
Yeah, it's so handy.
Gantt charts.
Format the paperback and hand paint the front.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, that's awesome. I like that because I think there was for a while there a really big focus on rapid release, getting us out as much as you can. Yeah. And that was the only way to be successful. And I think we're kind of learning that.
I think we've all eased back from that a bit, eh? Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of people got burnt out on that.
Even the people that did really well, I think at the end of the day, they suffered in some way for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people can do it.
Exactly. No problem.
I know it's not for anyone, but I just think a lot of people trying to do it just didn't work. So I like the fact that you've kind of taken stock of that and been able to go.
We've learned a lot from you today.
Can I just ask one question about I'm picking up just from talking to you here today that you're quite a funny person. So I'm kind of imagining that your books are kind of like got a bit of humor to them, but maybe I'm wrong. And I'm curious about the spectrum of monster romance. Are there monster romances that are quite dark and like dark romance-y kind of vibe? And then maybe there's ones that aren't, or are they all kind of a bit lighthearted or a bit, you mentioned having fun in them earlier. So I was just curious.
Like it is interesting because like there are definitely like a few dark monster romances, like, but to the assumption when you tell someone monster romance, they're just like, are they like horror books? Are they scary? Like, I'm like, oh no, and like stalked by the Kraken, they're like, oh no, like, is this like a scary book? Yeah. Like, no, like. More often than not, I feel like monster romance is like super soft. Like that you have a large spectrum in between of some people will do their monster romances like not as soft or not as consent based. But like a lot of the ones that like I write and that have done really well are like surprisingly to people, very soft, very like a lot of people love that I have consent-based tentacles. I didn't think I was like, yeah, he's asking. He's asking beforehand. Feels like a big ask that he should like ask beforehand with the tentacles. Try and see this is like G-rated as possible, but I'm not that ship may have sailed so far.